rim of Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris, Chris is safely back from his voyage to the world beyond in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. In fact, Chris is actually in the other room.
Yeah. Hey, look at that. So what, our third show that we've done actually in the same location?
Mostly the same location. You're about 10, 12 feet away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give or take a few inches.
And you're assisted by a little white Bichon named Teddy Bear.
Yes, Teddy Bear with a cold nose.
Teddy Bear with a cold nose. And our guest, I don't think, has a cold nose. His name is Peter Davenport, and he heads up the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, welcome to the Paracast after, I guess, several years.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It's delightful to be here. Looking forward to 2 hours of talking about UFOs. There's a lot going on.
Well, we want to talk about that. We want to talk about your presentation before the citizen hearing on disclosure. But I wanted to ask you one thing, and this is the issue we were discussing the last time you were on the show. You were in the process of acquiring or renovating a missile silo.
Yeah, that's correct. For the longest time, decades ago, I aspired to own a missile site, an underground ICBM missile site. And in 2005, an opportunity to own one presented itself. 6 months later, after a lot of negotiation and paraphernalia, I purchased one. And I own it, and I'm still cleaning it up. It's 2 to 3 million tons of cement. It's a big project. But that's what I own, and some people collect stamps, others collect coins, and I collect a missile site.
Now, is it a Minuteman site or a Nike site?
No, it's an Atlas E site.
An Atlas site? Oh, it's the big boys.
Yeah, it was built in the late 50s, early 60s. It was commissioned in April of 1961. Again, it was the first underground ICBM missile site in the U.S. arsenal. Site 6 commanded out of Fairchild Air Force Base near Spokane. And I purchased it in March of 2006, and I'm still cleaning it up.
How many square feet do you have down there?
About 18,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big site.
If the world is going to end and I have enough time, you know where I'm going.
Yeah, I'm renting out space a square foot at a time.
So at the present rate of reconstruction, cleaning it out, etc., how long do you think it's going to take you to finish this task?
Yeah, I've projected out it'll be the year 2317. I'll have it cleaned, and then the construction phase will begin. It's a big project.
Yeah.
Well, the way right it's now, going, if this world is still here, then.
Yeah. I'm currently working on a project. We're almost done. I and a coworker, who's an engineer, been a big help to me. We're building a gearbox actuator for an 80,000-pound door that rolls on railroad wheels on a track. That's what I'm up to. That's the type of thing you do when you're on a missile site.
When the kids come trick-or-treating, boy, it's a real shocker when that door opens, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Trick-or-treat. You can come out in a spacesuit or something?
Yeah, I do. My alien costume. Like, down in Phoenix, Governor Fife Symington had a member of his staff come out in an alien suit, proving that the Phoenix Lights event was all a hoax.
Yeah, and then he comes out 10 years later and says, well, actually, I saw it too.
Yeah, so much for public servants, huh? Yeah.
Well, this particular one, of course, was tried and convicted of a crime, high crimes, misdemeanors, forced to resign as governor, and then Clinton pardoned Symington because Symington saved his life. One time, apparently this was something where Clinton could have drowned if he wasn't saved by Symington. So therefore he earned the pardon.
Yeah. My suspicion is your assessment or your description of the situation may be accurate, but I've long wondered whether Fife Symington was pardoned by Clinton because Fife Symington had played along with the game back in 1997 and not spilled the beans on the fact that he had had one of those huge triangles fly over him. I recently calculated how big one of the chevron-shaped craft was, the one that flew across the home of Sue Watson, and it was not less than 7.4 terrestrial statute miles in width.
Wow.
Miles. It was a huge, huge craft. Could have been as much as 9.6 statute miles across, too.
Just to put this in perspective, the alien motherships in the movie Independence Day, they were 15 miles in diameter, right?
I don't know. I can't address that, but they were big.
Well, you know, CGI. Big. And you know, to save money when they made that film, they had students doing some of the work.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I remember when that movie premiered back, I think it was 1997, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the key about the movie is that Jeff Goldblum was able to save the world with an Apple PowerBook.
Yeah.
That connected wirelessly to an alien network using technology that hadn't been invented yet because we didn't use Wi-Fi then. People forget.
Yeah.
Sometimes life imitates art.
Something like that. That's where we got the idea, by the way. Because a couple of years later, Apple included AirPort, which was the Wi-Fi connection. Seriously speaking, so Peter, last week you were over at the citizen hearing on disclosure, the event sponsored by Stephen Bassett at the National Press Club. Now, you gave a presentation. Did you have a chance to check out the rest of the proceedings?
Oh, I was present for almost all of the proceedings, I think, except when I had to step out for an interview or something along those lines. When I arrived there, I didn't really understand what the format was going to be. I didn't realize what was going to happen. We hadn't been really, in my opinion, thoroughly briefed on what was going to happen. But looking back on the event, I'm roundly impressed by what happened there. I was roundly impressed by the quality of the committee members. They did a wonderful job of cutting right to the heart of the issue for all presenters, and I was very impressed with the quality of the panel members, the UFO investigators who'd been invited to the event. Stephen Bassett is to be complimented on the great job he did. It was really a landmark event, and I think it's going to sort of break the ice and start things rolling, perhaps.
Now, there have been some criticisms that a few of those participants were maybe not as properly vetted. I think you know some of the names.
Yeah. Well, that's always the case. Any distribution of people, any collection or group of people, you will find differences. My predisposition by nature, I think, and by my training as a scientist, is to stick to the facts, stick to what we know, and try my level best not to overstep what those facts may say. Other people are more conjectural. They're reporters. They're interested in other subjects that are, in my opinion, peripheral to the UFO phenomenon. But I can't control that. I can't address that issue. That's their preference, apparently. And they were invited by the organizer, so he presumably knew what their predisposition was before he invited them.
I think the problem we have with Mr. Bassett is that when he was on the PowerCast last, and that must be 2009 or thereabouts, he basically said he didn't care, which bothered
him. Didn't care about the facts, you mean, or the vetting of people's testimony?
The latter. He didn't really care about the vetting. And I think part of the problem and one of the issues here, before we get into the thing, the evidence and the presentation about UFOs and everything, is the fact that people who have somewhat wackier points of view, that's what the press seizes on, and that's sometimes one of the problems that you have in trying to get serious attention focused on UFOs, the fact that they don't look for the people who have the radar, visual sightings, and trace evidence. They look at somebody with a wacky theory, and that's what counts. What counts is we have Peter Davenport joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the PowerCast.
Yeah.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio. DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Being prepared against possible food shortages and economic collapse is not complicated. Just remember two words, disaster, stuff. Add .com after those two words and you've got just one site for all your preparedness needs. DisasterStuff.com prepares your family against food shortages with Linden Farms freeze-dried foods in buckets or Gourmet Reserves freeze-dried food in number 10 cans, both with free shipping. Purify and rid your water of contaminants with a Big Berkey or other Berkey system and get free shipping plus a water level spigot or fluoride filter at cost, and protect your radios and other electronics from EMPs with our EMP Faraday bags starting at just $5.90. When the food shortages and economic instability happens, be ready with all your stuff from DisasterStuff.com. Just remember two words, DisasterStuff.com. Freedom through self-reliance and personal responsibility.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. Do you know the number one most valuable item in a crisis? Some people think the answer is gold. Others think it's a gun. But the correct answer will shock you. I just created a free video at crisis123.com that reveals a surprising item that is more valuable than gold in a crisis. 97% of Americans don't have this one critical item. In fact, they haven't even given it a thought. And the sad truth is that you may not survive without it when a real crisis hits and a starving mob is right outside your door. What I have to tell you could literally make the difference between life and death for you and your family. Watch my video at crisis123.com to discover the number one most valuable item in a crisis. You'll be shocked. See the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go watch my video now at crisis123.com before they force me to shut it down. Again, that's crisis123.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, one of those rare episodes where Chris is sort of in the studio. He's actually in the next studio over at our palatial estate located on the planet. No, we don't want to mention that. People will think that I'm actually E.T. Peter Davenport joining us on the Paracast this week. He was a presenter at the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, having a very gracious response to the proceedings. So let's look at really the highlights of what you did there, and we'll get into where UFO evidence is nowadays, and also about current cases. What's happening now? So realizing that you're going to be presenting before a group of former members of Congress, obviously you assembled what you consider to be your best evidence. Peter, can you give us a few ideas of where you went with this?
Yeah, actually, I'll share with our listeners a fact that is not known. I had written out a three-page statement that I was prepared to make, and one of the organizers who had read it said he didn't think it was quite appropriate. So, and I actually agree with the assessment. Again, going back to an earlier statement I made during the program, I didn't know what the format was going to be. So very, very soon before I was scheduled to testify before the committee, I had to cobble together an alternative presentation. And what I decided to do was just talk about some of the more dramatic cases, dramatic and well qualified or well documented cases, rather, that have come to the National UFO Reporting Center over the last 19 years. My presentation was extemporaneous after I read a short paragraph at the beginning. What I did was just share with the committee some of the really, really interesting material that has come to the UFO Center since 1994, when I became its second director. That's what I did. My evening presentation just over a week ago, 8 days ago, was a much more informal presentation of some of those cases that I addressed during my testimony. And that was streamed live over the internet to those people who subscribed to the event. And apparently, certainly the latter was very well received. People had no idea how far we can take back the UFO phenomenon, going back, it appears, possibly, if cave paintings have any relationship to the UFO phenomenon, they appear to on the face of them, we can take back the UFO phenomenon as far as maybe 12,000 years. If we can take it back 12,000 years, the question remains whether we can take it back 12 million years or perhaps billions of years. That, in a nutshell, is what I presented, what I did, and the reaction that I had from some of the viewers.
The people who talked to you, the questioners, the former members of Congress, what sort of issues were they focusing on?
Well, I think they were looking for evidence, and that's part of the reason I presented before them the way I did, presenting just hardball cases, cases that involved radar tracings, cases that involved multiple witnesses. Some of the criteria I applied, my evening presentation, these are cases that have multiple witnesses, some kind of hard evidence indicating that a real and dramatic event had occurred. I talked about one of the cases I cited during my testimony, and I alluded to, I think, during my evening presentation, was a case that occurred over Providence, Rhode Island on the 22nd of June, year 2000. An airline pilot flying a single-engine turboprop from Nantucket Island up to New Hampshire ran into some heavy thunderstorms over Boston, and he in an attempt to avoid them, he skirted out east of Providence, Rhode Island, and out west of Providence. He was going to go west of Boston to get around the heavy weather. As he was flying over Providence, right over the shoreline, he saw a dark object ahead of his aircraft in the west, close to where the sun had just set. It was about 9:20 or 9:30 at night. And our listeners can go to our website and read the actual statement by the pilot. In very short order, he realized, whereas he first thought it was a soaring bird, he realized that the object was actually approaching his aircraft at extremely high speed, and he was mortified to see that it was almost on a collision course with his airplane. It missed his airplane by, he estimated, 50 feet. It went right under his starboard wing, his right-hand wing. He got on the radio to the Air Traffic Control Service, or center, and asked them if they had anything on radar. At first they said, no, we don't have anything. We don't see anything. A few seconds later they called him back and said, now we have it, and it has reversed its course, and it is tracking your airplane. So that's the type of case I like to talk about, because you have a good witness. You have multiple witnesses. You have radar tracing. It was a very, very good case. That's part of the reason I included it in my brief presentation Wednesday morning.
Yeah, that's pretty riveting stuff. Boy, it sure freaked me out if I was a pilot and all of a sudden something goes flying by just mere feet from my plane.
Yeah. I've talked to that pilot probably on half a dozen occasions.
Mm-hmm. Did he give a description of it? Was he able to really ascertain the shape or actual size?
He estimates he was within 50 feet of that object, which gives a person, even though it was streaking by his airplane, he had perhaps a short period of time to get a good eyeball on it and see what it looked like. He said that it was the shape of an egg with the sharp nose pointed forward. It had no windows. It had no cockpit. It had no engine nacelles. It had no maneuvering control surfaces on it that he could see. It was the color of a charcoal briquette. It was dull black.
Wow.
And about the size of an American sedan. So relatively small, not a big craft at all. And again, people can go to our website, ufocenter.com, and look at that case again for June 22nd of the year 2000 and read the pilot's report. It's a very, very well-composed and well-written report that shares the details with anybody who cares to read it. And that's not atypical by any means of the many, many reports that we have received over the last 19 years from pilots, astronomers, police officers, emergency responders, all sorts of professional people.
Yeah, trained observers, you would think.
Who've been witness to strange objects, and that's what the National UFO Reporting Center does. We wear many hats. Whenever you deal with the public, you have to do many, many things, of course, but fundamentally, we do two things. We provide people with a place to record their data and report it, and we also make it available to the public as quickly as we can so that people may have access to the truth and information that their government should be providing them with, but is not.
We have Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Your freedoms are on the line. The Second Amendment is in danger. How soon before your freedoms are taken away? What can you not live without? What is your greatest dependency? Is it your guns? Is it your home? No, it's food. It all boils down to the food supply. Tyrannical governments control people by controlling their food supply. Don't be dependent. Be self-sufficient. Don't wait for the government to feed you. Feed yourself. I can warn you, but I can't feed you. Do like Alex has done and get a supply of food from eFoods Direct. It's the best long-term long-term storable food on the planet. Get the popular Mega Patriot Pack free, a 24-day supply of food plus stove, cook pot, and fuel. Call 800-250-1857 or go to efoodsdirect.com/Alex and get up to 20 Mega Patriot Packs free with purchase. Build your food supply, be in control, be self-sufficient, and be a patriot. Call 800-250-1857 or efoodsdirect.com/Alex and get your free Patriot Pack today.
We've lived in this neighborhood for years. We have an alarm system and all of our doors have deadbolts. They kicked in our door and were in and out of our house in about 5 minutes. The police arrived in about 20 minutes, but they were long gone with our TV, jewelry, and my guns. I kept thinking, what if my family had been home? The police officer said that more than 85% of break-ins are through a door, and that deadbolts alone don't stop intruders. The officer told me to go to EasyArmor.net if we wanted something that would actually stop an intruder. Easy Armor reinforces all of the weak points on your doors and is guaranteed to prevent kick-ins. I was surprised at how little Easy Armor costs. And I installed Easy Armor in about 30 minutes.
Visit EasyArmor.net. That's the letters EasyArmor.net. Or call 888-58-ARMOR. That's 888-582-7667. EasyArmor.net. Ultimate door security made easy.
Gardeners, here comes another growing season, but don't use last year's soil. Maximize yields in your survival garden with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 is an organic soil conditioner, fertilizer amendment, and compost accelerant that provides a broad spectrum of beneficial microorganisms, enzymes, trace minerals, vitamins, and various organic acids. EM1 helps regulate the soil's pH level and its soil microbes, improving moisture retention and drought tolerance. Remember last year's dry conditions? EM1 from Terraganics is safe, chemical-free, and certified for use on all organic farms. It improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, and gives up to 20% more nutrient value in fruits and vegetables and greatly increases shelf life. And EM1 is so simple to use, just mix with water and apply. This year, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics, life's getting better.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Semi-live on the scene, Gene and Chris in almost the same studio, talking to Peter Davenport as we continue. He's discussing some of the key cases he brought before the citizen hearing on disclosure. Now, I guess the key issue people ask and then want to know more about the cases that you brought together here is, how much do you think the government really knows about all this? Because the purpose of a request for disclosure is the assumption that they have something substantial to disclose.
It is clear to me, from my vantage point, that the government must know about the UFO phenomenon. It launches me into a subject which, in my opinion, is my greatest contribution to the UFO community and to explanation of what the UFO phenomenon is, and that has to do with a paper I wrote on the use of passive radar for detecting UFOs. What we need to do, in my opinion, is break the chain of eyewitness accounts. Eyewitness accounts, in many cases, are very convincing, very interesting, but they nevertheless are hearsay evidence. What I would like to do is be able to show objectively and factually that there are these strange objects that have flight characteristics that defy explanation in terms of terrestrial limitations on aerodynamic devices. And that is my paper that I wrote on the use of passive radar for detecting UFOs. Passive radar is using the transmitted signals of commercial radio and television stations, which under ordinary circumstances radiate out into space forever. Once the photons, the electromagnetic radiation, starts radiating out into space, it continues essentially forever, unless there is something that will reflect those radio waves back down to Earth, which allows us to detect the target. I wrote a paper on the subject of using those commercial radio and television signals for detecting anomalous targets. Well, I mention all of this because the U.S. government has been doing exactly that with a facility that stretches across the southern tier of the United States. It's referred to as the FENCE. It is the U.S. Naval Space Surveillance System that stretches from San Diego to the state of Georgia, where its command headquarters, I believe, are located, for now almost probably more than half a century. Since the late 1950s, the U.S. Navy has maintained this facility for tracking satellites and, in fact, all orbiting objects in the near-Earth environment, up to probably 500 or 1,000 miles above the surface of the planet. Are we to believe that the U.S. Navy has never detected an anomalous target? If UFOs are real, and if they reflect radio signals, the U.S. Navy must be awash in anomalous target reports. They must be getting signals reflected from objects for which the Navy would have no explanation. They can't be aircraft, they can't be migratory birds, they can't be satellites, presumably either hovering at very low altitude or very low speeds, or traveling at very high speeds, altogether incompatible with those other terrestrial objects I alluded to a moment ago. So the U.S. Navy and the U.S. government must have known about UFOs for at least 60 years. That's my assessment of the situation.
I totally agree with that. And it's interesting that someone like Colonel John Alexander would write a book on the subject of UFOs and talk about putting together this really high-powered team of insiders and then, you know, going to the government and trying to find out who knows what, you know, where this is compartmentalized. And then you look through his book and you never see the NSA mentioned. And you would think that that would be one of the first places that he would inquire some sort of sourcing at the NSA, because, of course, they monitor our airspace and communications and what have you. So
there's a story that came out the other day about the government is able to get a hold of information on over 1.5 billion personal communications every single day, such as emails and everything else.
Oh, yeah. That's the NSA facility that is just about to open in the state of Utah. I argue that the government does not have the authority to do that. The federal government doesn't. But it's going to take some very serious public pressure to get that facility shut down. They are designed to intercept up to 8 terabytes of information per second. As you say, all electronic communications that the Americans
engage. Well, the question I have is whether they are monitoring this one. We're doing this through Skype.
Absolutely. It is being recorded as we speak by the NSA facility in Utah.
Would that make it easier for me to edit it? I just call them up and say, could you give me your copy? Maybe it sounds better than mine.
Yeah. Maybe you can have them edit it for you and send it back to you ready to go. Get some of your tax dollars back.
Right. Well, they've got us on stress monitoring and analysis equipment. They've got it totally screwed down tight, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. I agree. Yep.
Even if they've tracked UFOs and they have all the sightings, do you think they have a clue as to what is actually behind the mystery?
Well, I think at least to the degree that they can show to their own satisfaction that these objects are not aircraft, they are not satellites, they're not crash dummies, they're not swamp gas, they're not plastic bags blowing in the wind. So they must know or suspect that they're dealing with something of extraordinary nature that could not have come from this planet. Whether they've had sit-down meetings with the presumed occupants of these craft, I have no idea. But I strongly suspect that they have. It would be an obvious next step. They could not afford to allow these creatures to amalgamate or to associate with other nations, the governments of other nations, because that would risk tipping the defense balance in favor of another nation. We couldn't allow that to happen. So clearly it is something that our government would want to do. It would be fraught with peril. You never know what the outcome or offshoot of a meeting like that might be, but they would certainly have to do it. How long they've been having these communications. This was an issue that was addressed at the citizens' hearing last week. There are claims that the U.S. government has alien creatures available to it, whether incarcerated. How they keep them, I don't know. It's not something I'd want to do, given their technological sophistication. If they can travel between stars and cover the distance that they no doubt have come to arrive at the planet Earth, I don't think I'd want to be in a position of forcing their hand one way or another. I'd be on my best behavior, I think.
Well, you also think that would make it almost impossible for them to capture a craft, let alone a creature.
Yes, unless the craft had crashed, leaving the creature without a means of conveyance off this planet.
Yeah, I have a problem, though, with the whole idea of UFO crashes. I mean, if they're so exalted in with their technology and they're, you know, hundreds, thousands, maybe millions of years ahead of us, don't you think they would have figured out the bugs in the in their hardware and they wouldn't crash?
Could be, but there's also the possibility that there could be competition between different strains of creatures. And if there's competition, there would be the likelihood of conflict. And then you have creatures with equal degrees, equal measures of technology fighting one another. In fact,
sounds like the Romulans and the Klingons.
Exactly.
Well, Peter, in your database, how many reports do you have of UFOs in apparent conflict with one another?
At least two.
You know what? I'm going to ask you that question as soon as we get back from the break. Okay, Peter?
Folks, you can find so much more of the things that we do if you go to our site, theparacast.com, theparacast.com.
We have Peter Davenport joining us this week with Gene and Chris. You're in
The Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the Earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
It's time to get real.
It's time to prepare.
Economic collapse,
social unrest,
natural disasters,
government takeover,
UN takeover.
Are you ready?
Ready?
Ready? Get ready at the Social Prepper Trade Show in Dalton, Georgia,
June 6th, 7th, and 8th.
3 massive days to learn self-reliance and emergency preparedness. Exhibitors ranging from survival, solar, power, food, protection, guns, ammo, disaster preparation products, hunting, and much more. Seminars by Dr. Wallach, Robert Henry, Raymond Blake Hogshead, Trish Deer, Sandy Hall, Rick Austin, Survivor Jane, and more of our nation's experts on survival and preparedness.
Don't miss the Social Prepper Trade Show,
June 6th through 8th, Dalton, Georgia. For discount tickets, prize raffle, and info, go to socialprepper.com.
Enter code GCN for 50% online ticket discount purchase.
The Social Prepper Trade Show,
presented in part by GCN.
What do you do when your propane runs out and you don't have a large amount of wood for cooking? That's when you need a Grover Rocket Stove from StockStorage.com. The Grover Rocket Stove starts easily with any combustible material, like junk mail, small twigs, leaves, weeds, or dry sagebrush. Then just add a small amount of kindling wood, and you'll be cooking entire meals in minutes. Grover Rocket Stoves are made right here in the USA and are built to last a lifetime using heavy-duty thick-gauge steel and are painted with high-temp paint to withstand heat. Go to StockStorage.com and see three great Grover Rocket Stoves. Stainless steel, heavy duty, or our original Grover Rocket Stove for only $135. And get free shipping to the lower 48. For phone orders, call 801-361-6984. Or go to StockStorage.com. That's 801-361-6984. Or StockStorage.com. The original Grover Rocket Stove minimal wood use cooking stoves. Available exclusively from StockStorage.com.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP. As slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, we have Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center, and he says, on record, you have information about two UFOs that were having at each other, didn't get along?
Well, I can't say that. What I have is at least two cases in which it appears that a craft, a sophisticated craft, let's call it a UFO for the purposes of this program, and I think that's a fair assessment. On the evening of the 7th of January, 1995, a very, very unusual event occurred over the city of McMinnville, Tennessee, Warren County, Tennessee. That night, people from all over the area allegedly were witness to a fleet of craft, a collection of objects that were descending vertically over the airport of McMinnville. Again, this is in the state of Tennessee. Suddenly, an immense explosion took place. Huge fragments, reportedly blue in color, were thrown up high into the sky, and they cascaded down onto the surrounding area. I presented this case in some detail at the citizens' hearing. Part of the evidence I presented was a handwritten, detailed, five-page assessment by a deputy sheriff of Warren County Sheriff's Office of what was reported to him by the citizens who had been witness to the event. That was the first one. A very, very interesting case that went totally uninvestigated.
Wow, you would think that somebody would find debris and we'd have some physical evidence to examine.
Well, it's interesting. I had a young fellow who was a student up in Kentucky who heard me talking about this case shortly after it had occurred, and he decided to go down and investigate it. He was a student studying to become a private investigator. He decided this would be a good case to sort of cut his teeth on, if you will, a good case to try his skills as an investigator on. So he went down there. He talked to actual witnesses and reported to me that people who lived in the area about 90 minutes after the event had occurred were awakened by knocks on their front door by people who claimed to be with the quote-quote government, who were requesting permission to go on the property of these people looking for fragments of the explosion. The people from the government did not identify what branch of the government they were from. They did not say, beyond the fact that they were looking for fragments of an exploded aircraft, they did not go into any detail at all. A very, very good case. And I wish I'd been closer to McMinnville, Tennessee, to be able to investigate it myself. That was not possible, unfortunately. The second case is equally interesting, and it's one that occurred over the state of New Mexico on Sunday night, the 15th of August, 1999, at 11:18 p.m. An immense flash occurred that was reported from as far north as Montana, as far south as into Mexico, and it was a flash that occurred. In fact, I had hoped to show the video during my presentation. Time ran out. I was not able to do so. But it was a flash that occurred at a location about 60 or 80 miles west of Albuquerque, where at least three objects were reported by eyewitnesses on the ground to be converging. They were, their flight path, their ground track over the ground in New Mexico appears to us, upon analysis of their reports, the flash occurred where these objects were converging. It's an immensely interesting case, and I've talked about it now for 14 years in presentation, and interestingly, I've gotten virtually no traction in the UFO community. I have the video from the Sandia National Laboratory sky camera that recorded it.
Wow.
And I have friendlies, people who support my work in Sandia Corporation, who sent me some very, very interesting video that was captured by the sky camera.
Okay, can you post this somewhere, or is this posted somewhere so we can all see it?
It's been on my website for 14 years.
Ah.
The link may have expired, but we'll try to renew it. But all of the dozens and dozens of reports are posted to our website, again, for Sunday night, the 15th of August, 1999. People can go and just read what they
I seem to remember getting a couple calls on that particular event myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to go through my database to double-check on that, but I do seem to recall something happened in August 99. Things have been pretty quiet around there, and this kind of came out of the blue.
Yep. It was a fascinating case. I had the video shortly after the event had occurred. And interestingly, the most interesting part of it for me was the reaction of Sandia National Laboratories. They said they did an article. The Sandia National Laboratories newspaper, in-house newspaper, did an article, and they claimed that it was a meteor. Nothing could be further from the truth. If people look at the reports on our website, they will see that there were several objects that were in the skies above New Mexico just an instant before the explosion occurred. And interestingly, and Sandia had no explanation for this fact that I'm about to share, there was a second flash that occurred, immensely bright flash, that was seen from hundreds, possibly thousands of miles away, 21 minutes after the first one. Sandia didn't even address the second flash. Very strange event.
You would think there'd be some sort of sonic boom or some sort of audio thing would be also reported if it was some sort of bolide or celestial object like that.
Absolutely. A bolide that is so bright that it can be seen for thousands of miles. And let's limit it to hundreds just to be conservative. It was seen as far north as Montana, certainly Wyoming. And it was seen from all over the northwest or the southwestern United States. A bolide or a meteor that is that bright would certainly, as you point out, Chris, would certainly have created an audible sound.
Yeah.
The meteor over Chelyabinsk on the 15th of February this year is a case in point. It blew windows out.
Yeah. Yeah. People were flying glass.
Why would a flash that immense not have generated an audible report?
Yeah, and these types of reports are very unusual, too. You don't see them that often, but I remember back this would have probably been 94 or 95, I had witnesses on I-70 around the Glenwood Springs area report the whole canyon, late at night, the whole canyon just being lit brighter than daylight for just an instant, and then, boom, it was pitch black again in the canyon. And nobody heard anything. Nobody reported seeing any sort of objects. It was just all of a sudden, like, it turned brighter than day. for an instant, and then it was gone.
I have cases like that, too. In fact, one of the cases I presented at the citizens' hearing during my evening hour-long presentation was a case that occurred in Ontario, Canada, over Lake Erie, and over the western end of Pennsylvania. An object that streaked from north to south and suddenly stopped just south of the Pennsylvania Turnpike and hovered. And it was strobing so brightly, according to one witness on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, that it illuminated the entire valley that he was in.
Wow.
Brighter than daylight. So these cases are occurring with some frequency, considerable frequency, and they're posted to our website at ufocenter.com.
Listen, let me just ask you a favor here. That UFO camera photos that you mentioned briefly a moment ago, is that something you can maybe look up in the next few days and give us a direct link to post on the site or in our forums?
I think we have to refresh the link, but the problem is, and the reason we let that link lapse, it was on our site for many, many years, and it is an immense video file. So when people access it, they download gigabytes of material. And if they access it two or three times, it dramatically increases the amount of data that is downloaded from our site, and we have to pay for that.
Well, we have the ability here to send quite a lot of data every month at our server. We could, if you want, mirror something like this and just see what kind of traffic it brings. And if it reaches a point where it's a problem, we can always withhold it, but we do have the capability. Let's talk about that later, though. Peter Davenport joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
It's time to get real.
It's time to prepare.
Economic collapse.
Social unrest.
Natural disasters.
Government takeover.
UN takeover.
Are you ready?
Ready?
Ready? Get ready at the Social Prepper Trade Show in Dalton, Georgia,
June 6th, 7th, and 8th.
3 massive days to learn self-reliance and emergency preparedness. Exhibitors ranging from survival, solar, power, food, protection, guns, ammo, disaster preparation products, hunting, and much more. Seminars by Dr. Wallach, Robert Henry, Raymond Blake Hogshead, Trish Deer, Sandy Hall, Rick Austin, Survivor Jane, and more of our nation's experts on survival and preparedness.
Don't miss the Social Prepper Trade Show,
June 6th through 8th, Dalton, Georgia. For discount tickets, prize raffle, and info, go to socialprepper.com.
Enter code GCN for 50% online ticket discount purchase.
The Social Prepper Trade Show,
presented in part by GCN.